is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor and they're ready to score, so let the game begin. And let's see how the ball's gonna bounce today.
Playoffs?
Tim Gallagher, basketball historian, joins the Bullseye again. Tim, it's great to have you on. And what a series we just wrapped up with the Thunder and the Warriors, one for the ages. I can't say enough about the performance of both teams overall. Something I'll never forget, between Curry, Thompson, Durant, Westbrook, just a great battle between two really good teams. And I'd like to get your thoughts on that series, the turning points, who impressed you, who did not. And then also, we'll get into a little finals preview later on. So, first of all, let's wrap up your thoughts on the series now that it's over.
Sure. Well, it was a classic, and we weren't the only ones watching with interest. I saw that there were some ratings records for televised games, so it definitely captured everyone's imagination, and having that star power certainly helped. And a couple of things that to note about that, and I know on the last podcast, at the time we talked, the Warriors were down 3-1, and I thought it was very unlikely that they'd come back and win three straight, especially the way OKC had been dismantling them. But to Golden State's credit, just the greatness of Thompson and Curry in particular, and just their mindset was something to see. And you hear the rumblings of OKC choking, and I can't go there at all. I think they played a valiant effort, and even on the road, they were down 4 points with 2 minutes to go. And I thought another possession here or there, or Durant hits another jumper, and now we're right there going down to the final second. So I thought OKC played with a lot of heart, a lot of class. Obviously, there was some, a little bit of chippiness there on both ends, but considering how competitive those games were and how much was at stake, I thought that both teams played with a lot of class. And the thing about OKC as well, that they beat the Spurs and Golden State 7 times in a month when basically nobody could beat them the whole season, right? So even though they didn't get to the finish line in that series against Golden State, if anyone would have said one team could beat the Spurs and the Warriors 7 times in a month during this season, no one would have believed that. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, great point.
And the other thing, though, I did see a statistic that Westbrook had the most turnovers in the Western Conference Finals in the last 30 years. So I know with him, you kind of have to give him that really, really long leash because of all the reward you get with his amazing explosiveness. But there were some times where you just needed to execute a little better, and he got a little careless. And losing that game six at home when they had a closeout game, I thought it was really over then at that point. Now over in terms of how is Golden State going to lose on a game seven on their home floor. But OKC came to play and took them literally down to the last 2 minutes. So I don't think there's anything OKC can hang their heads low about. That was a very proud and outstanding performance. A couple other points. I thought Steven Adams really made a leap overall as a player in the playoffs this year, and certainly against the Spurs and against Golden State in particular. What a dominant physical force he is, and for such a young player, and just seeing his development, I think there's going to be a lot of greatness, especially when a guy like DeAndre Jordan is making first team All NBA. I think there's a lot of room for other centers to make a leap there, which that's a whole other story, but I was shocked to see DeAndre Jordan on first team NBA. But another quick point about the final four teams that were in the NBA playoffs here, and obviously we had Toronto and Cleveland in the East and then OKC, Golden State in the West. And you talk about teams, and it's a players' league or a coaches' league, and when I thought about those four teams, the NBA level inexperience of the coaches that had made it to the Final Four. Now, Dwayne Casey's coached for a while. He's been an assistant for a long time in the NBA, and then he's been at Toronto for I don't know right off the top of my head, but you know, what, five years or so probably. So he's, you know, established himself there a little bit. But the rest of the coaches, Tyronn Lue has not even coached a full season yet, right, because he stepped in for Glatt. And then you look on the other side, Steve Kerr, although he's a household name with NBA fans, this is only his second year as a head coach, and he missed most of this season when Luke Walton took over when Kerr had his back surgery. And then Billy Donovan's a first-year coach. So I know a lot of people were knocking the Bulls and Hoiberg, but you look at Hoiberg's credentials compared to the rest of those guys, and he's really right there. I mean, he didn't have quite the college-level success that Billy Donovan did, winning a couple championships and getting to a couple other Final Fours, but he had Iowa State in the tournament every year and went fairly deep in the tournament. So I think the point is it really is a players' league because – you know, the teams that made it the farthest in the NBA, most of those coaches were very inexperienced in terms of having been coaching in the NBA for a long time. There were, you know, in those Final Four, there were no Popoviches or tenure like Jerry Sloan or even coaches with one team for a long time.
Yeah, I do want to make a quick point about the Thunder. I think the message, really, you measure a man how he is in the worst of times. And Kevin Durant, demeanor after Game 7 when he, you know, just a devastating loss and a devastating series for him, he really said a lot to me about the quality of that man as an individual, the way how gracious he was in defeat, how he went to each player, the way he acted with each player. I'd also read an article, he went to every ball boy from Golden State to thank them. I mean, I can't say enough about a guy like that. That's just incredible. On the downside, I thought Durant lost the series in Game 6. That was a chance for them to win that game. 6-19 in the first half, Barkley killed him at halftime. And he was right. It's just, he finished 11-30. And, you know, if he was, I thought Game 7 he played much better. If he was, shared the ball as much as he did in Game 7, Game 6, I think the Thunder could have won that game. He just did not, it was one of the worst, you know, performances I've seen from a guy, you know, that quality of a superstar, and it really hurt, you know, almost to watch, because he didn't really hit much unless it was a dunk or at the rim, and he was just forcing up everything, and it was just, I'm going to win this, I'm going to make my mark, and it just blew up in his face. I thought he definitely played much better in Game 7, but that said, they blew an opportunity.
Right, and I agree. He is a class act for sure. And there were some instances where I thought he either passed when he should have shot, or a few times where, the opposite of that. So his decision making on a few possessions at key times in Game 6 and 7, I thought were a little questionable. But you know, very similar to Curry and Thompson, Westbrook and Durant, you kind of have to just let them loose. And I know even Kerr mentioned that there's times that Klay Thompson or Curry are doing things that he doesn't really agree with, but you kind of have to just let it go, because the payoff is usually there. And and as classy as Durant was with his teammates, with the opponents, I guess Westbrook just exited the floor and didn't have that same, at least outwardly on the floor right after the game, that kind of reception with his opponents. But
I love Westbrook's game. I think he's a phenomenal talent, and I've always been a fan of him. I think he's just a force of nature, a great player. But his subtle shots at Curry during that series were pathetic, and the way he handled the loss after Game 7 was pathetic. And I have a lot of respect for him in both manners. The laughing at Curry's defense, I don't understand. It seems like there's a subtle just kind of, the word for it is despise. They despise Curry's game for whatever reason, and I find it irritating, and I find it a little offensive, and I'm glad, after seeing his reaction to a few of the questions regarding Curry, I'm glad they lost. I'm glad the Warriors won. I really didn't have a dog in the fight until I saw that, and I thought that
right.
They had won.
Right. Yeah, well, with Westbrook, like we've kind of said, he's a little bit like the Tasmanian devil, right? It's hard to corral him, but again, it's usually enough positive that you deal with some of the intensity and things that maybe aren't as as sportsmanlike as you'd ideally like to see from a pro of his stature. So, you know, a lot of emotion, a lot of competitive situation, but, you know, again, the greatest players, you want to see how they conduct themselves, not only when things are going great, but like you said, with the adversity of losing that game seven and the way Durant handled it, you'd hope that most pros would be that way.
Yeah, so going on now, you know, now that series is wrapped up, and thanks for your thoughts on the Thunder and Warriors. Now we have an epic battle, rematch of last year's finals, but this time LeBron has his horses healthy, and, you know, Love and Kyrie Irving, and I think they're playing much better, and I think the series is going to be extremely competitive. I'd like your thoughts overall on the series, your prediction on the series, and also big picture. If LeBron loses this, does this, you know, that's quite a number of losses in the finals, right? I think he's what would be 2-5. Correct me if I'm wrong, or you know, that's a lot, a ton of losses. Do you think if he loses this, it would really negatively affect his stature as one of the greatest ever to play the game?
Well, I think it would impact it. Although I know we talked last year about the finals and LeBron and that similar question. And I think some of the teams that he's carried on his back to the finals, you wouldn't put them on the short list of great teams that have made it to the finals in NBA history or anything like that. Now, this team with a healthy Love and Kyrie Irving and, they've acquired Richard Jefferson and some other, with Channing Frye. So they've picked up some other pieces that their roster's in a lot better shape, I think, than it was last year at this time. But Golden State certainly hasn't slipped a notch either. And, in beating OKC, I mean, that Western Conference final was almost, with no disrespect to LeBron, that was almost an NBA Finals caliber series, right? It's how are we going to top this? So I think that would be slightly negative on LeBron, but I think the fact that he's gotten a 6 straight finals and how few players in NBA history have ever done that, you know, I don't think there's much you can do to really taint his legacy. Obviously, everyone knows what it would mean for Cleveland if they somehow were able to get over the finish line and win the championship. And I think it's going to be an incredible final. And, you know, we've got transcendent players like LeBron and Curry and Thompson. I'll put those three guys in that category just because of, you know, kind of the all-time stuff that they've done. And, and Kyrie Irving's probably not far behind them, but I wouldn't quite put him in that class. And I think it's going to be real interesting to see with Kevin Love, as we've talked about in past podcasts, for some reason he doesn't seem to get a lot of love. So this is a perfect stage for him to prove all those doubters wrong in terms of what kind of player he is. And I think a key is going to be how he plays on the defensive end of the floor as well. You know, he's going to get his points and throw great outlet passes and be a rebounder, but how's he going to be handling the pick and roll and defending, especially when the Warriors spread the floor and go small? So I think that's going to be an interesting matchup. I'd have to give the Warriors a slight edge, number one, because of the home court, and I'd look at their bench beyond their big threes, let's say, of both teams, the transcendent type players that we talked about, and it's close, but I'd take that group of Harrison Barnes, Iguodala, Sean Livingston, and Spates with a slight edge over, Shumpert, Richard Jefferson, Dellavedova, Channing Frye. I mean, it's not a big gap, but I would take that Warrior group just a little bit as an edge in terms of the next wave of players beyond the stars. So, I didn't have a dog in the fight either in the OKC Golden State series, but I as I was watching it, I was definitely having the feeling that I'm not done watching Curry and Klay Thompson play this year. I want to keep watching those guys play. It's so fun to watch them shoot the ball.
Completely agree. And what's Thompson got to do to be considered one of the greats in the game? I mean, after that game 6 performance, that was one of the best things I've ever seen. And I kind of feel like everybody talks about Kyrie Irving, Love, LeBron on one side. I just don't think he gets the same respect as some of the other great players do. And I don't know where you would rank him and when it comes to the best in the game today.
Right. Well, I love him, and I especially love his demeanor, where he's just a steely-eyed assassin, right? And as much as I love Curry, I think sometimes
theatrics or even a little bit much for me. And I know it's the emotion and the fans feed on that and his teammates feed on it. But something about Klay Thompson just going about his business and you know, not pumping his chest or pulling out his jersey or, you know, pointing to the heavens. I like that. And although that more subtle demeanor is probably, you know, why he's, you know, not quite as popular as some of the others, you know, because he's just that showmanship and that aspect of his game is not really part of who he is. But for me, that's kind of the beauty of him. And I really like, too, that Golden State made the adjustment in the series against OKC where Curry and Thompson did take the ball to the basket a little more. They mixed it up a little more. Now, a couple times, Thompson, as good as he is, went to the hoop and got swatted, right? It was, you know, Ibaka got him and some other guys got him a couple of times. But just the fact that he mixed it up and didn't rely totally on jumpers, he did some dribble penetration, tried to get to the rim. You know, I think even there were occasions where he wasn't successful finishing. It did give him that a little additional space he needed to get that jumper off. But so I'm going to go with Golden State in seven, although I can't wait to watch it, and I think it's going to be a tremendous, tremendous battle.
Great, Tim. One more question for you before we go. I want to ask you about the Bulls hiring Chip Schaefer. Could you give the audience a little bit of info on Chip Schaefer's history and then what you think of that hire, obviously with Rose's main trainer, you know, Jen Swanson being fired, left an opening here, and the Bulls reached back and brought their trainer from the glory days.
Right. Well, and Chip Schaefer, I've been familiar with him for a long time, actually. He was the trainer at Loyola Marymount when, unfortunately, Hank Gathers passed away. So, in fact, any of the listeners, you know, I'm sure all of you are familiar with the ESPN 30 for 30 series, and there's one called The Guru of Go, which is about the Loyola Marymount team with Paul Westhead as the coach, and Paul Westhead once was a Bulls coach, actually, in their history, but he was the coach there. And
did he win a title with the Lakers, too,
Paul Westhead? And he did, right. He won the title with the Lakers as their head coach. And coached later in the NBA as well with the Nuggets. But in between that, he was the coach of Loyola Marymount. And we talked about this a little bit when we did the podcast on the evolution of three-point shooting, but he introduced, you know, that Loyola Marymount would give up a two because they'd come down on the other end and shoot a three. And they had the personnel that they could beat most teams doing that. And, you know, the mix of Hank Gathers, Bo Kimball, they had a guard named Jeff Fryer that was a three-point marksman. But anyway, Chip Schaefer is in that documentary and talks about his time being there, and obviously it was an unfortunate situation with Gathers and his heart situation. But a couple thoughts on having Chip Schaefer back with the Bulls, and of course he was with Phil Jackson for not only the Bulls championships, but also with Lakers championships. So obviously Phil thinks highly of him and, you know, had him part of the organization there. And I think with the Bulls, a couple of things that were very noticeable last season is, one, there was a lot of injuries. And you know, what's going on where they just have so many injuries compared to a lot of the other teams in the league. So what can we do to improve that situation, more injury prevention, and keeping guys on the floor? Because as we've talked about in past podcasts, we never really got to, you know, enjoy the Bulls lineup that was envisioned when the season started and, you know, at the opening day roster. And just from the beginning. And some of those things are not preventable, right? Where, you know, like when Rose got elbowed and, you know, got the fractured orbital, and you know, there's not much you can do in terms of stretching or things like that. They're not going to prevent those things. But there was just such a wide array of injuries. You know, what can the Bulls do to prevent more of that? And then also, we talked about the Bulls just weren't very, very athletic, right? So strength and speed, you know, what can we do to get the players on the roster more athletic? And I know we talked late in the season when Holiday got acquired, and it kind of jumped off the screen at you that, wow, this guy's pretty athletic. And you know, even though he was more of a role player and a player off the bench, it showed if he was able to stand out with his athleticism that much, and you know, certainly not a top-tier player in the league, then it kind of put some perspective on how lacking the Bulls were in athleticism with everyone else. So hopefully Schaefer will be a trusted resource that's got a great history in the league and with the Bulls to help restore some of that.
One final thing to wrap up, I wanted to talk a little bit about the tragedy with the Pelicans player being unfortunately killed in, I think it was in Houston. Could you give a little background on that, and are you familiar with the player?
I am. So, yes, Bryce DeJean Jones, and it was actually in Dallas. And a couple things to note about him is he played for Coach Hoiberg, played for Fred at Iowa State. Although Bryce DeJean Jones was a pretty well-traveled player, he played at three different colleges. Originally he played at USC, then transferred to UNLV, and then ended up at Iowa State. And I won't go into his journey, but there were some troubles that kind of followed him along the way, although a very talented player, and obviously three Division I schools were willing to give him a chance. Interestingly enough, we had a personal experience with him, and I have a son named Bryce, but every year around the holidays, they play a big high school tournament with the top teams from around California and even other parts of the country, the Holiday Classic at Torrey Pines High School. And it so happened that one of our neighbors at the time had played at Taft High School. So Bryce DeJean Jones was from Woodland Hills Taft High School, which produced Jordan Farmar and a number of other NBA players over the years. So a real high-profile, very successful high school program. So my neighbor had played there back in the day, and so when the team was here, he hosted them for a Mexican buffet backyard-type lunch. And so knowing what a basketball fan I am and living nearby, he invited me over. And so I have a photo, which I'll send you, and maybe we can post it with the link, of my son Bryce as a young kid, a real young kid, with Bryce Jones. So we actually met him and spent time with him that day and, you know, kind of followed his career since then. There were a couple other notable players on that Taft team. Spencer Dinwiddie, who you may know, that was on the Pistons this year, played at the University of Colorado. DeAndre Daniels, who ended up at UConn and was on UConn's championship team with Shabazz Napier. So, not just your average high school team. But unfortunately, with Bryce DeJean Jones, and there's still details coming out and a toxicology report and so on, but he had been in Dallas to visit his girlfriend, and they have a one-year-old child. I believe it's a daughter. And so he was in town to see the girlfriend and his daughter to celebrate her one-year birthday. And apparently what happened is there was a mix-up. He only been to this apartment complex once earlier in the day and returned later in that evening, and 3 a.m. actually is what the reports say, and apparently was on the wrong floor. So when the door wasn't answered, speculation was he was thinking the girlfriend was locking him out or not letting him in, so he kicked in the door and to the outer area of the apartment, and some unsuspecting guy is in bed sleeping at 3 a.m. and his door's getting kicked in, and Bryce then proceeds to the bedroom door, and the resident didn't know what was going on. I mean, any of us would be obviously shocked if somebody's kicking down our door at 3 a.m. for any reason. And in Texas, it wouldn't be uncommon for someone to have a firearm relatively close by, and Bryce DeJean Jones was shot and killed. So there's still more details.
It's a tragedy. You cannot blame the homeowner. I mean, any one of us in a similar situation, I don't know if you had children in the house, but someone breaks down your door, and I'm sure if you heard someone knocking on your door and you had a firearm, it's just a horrible situation. But, I do not blame the homeowner either. It's just a tragedy. It's unfortunate.
Right. Well, and as I've got a 20-year-old son and a 15-year-old son, and so you try to look for teaching moments for things like this, and, I don't make light of it, but, if you're kicking down doors at 3 a.m, the odds of something bad happening to you are going to dramatically increase. Right? You don't have to be an analytics expert to figure that out. So, unfortunately, he put himself in a situation that was very risky. And that shouldn't have been the outcome, obviously, for him. But it's really especially sad that he, despite that well-traveled college journey, he made the NBA this year and had a pretty significant impact the latter part of the season for the Pelicans. He was getting a lot of playing time. I caught a couple of their games on League Pass, and I have followed him just because of our connection with him going back a number of years ago, having him in our neighborhood for that visit. So I was impressed to see that he had made an impact on the league, was playing pretty well. He'd gotten injured, but, was figuring into the Pelicans' plans going forward. So just a terrible situation, and just sad to see that happen. One other quick player that passed away not long ago, and then we'll wrap up, but Jim McMillan, who played on the 72 Lakers title team that won 33 straight games. And so he passed away at age 68 of heart failure. But as we've been talking about the Warriors this year, and of course the Bulls and their record-setting teams back in the Jordan, Phil Jackson era, the Lakers, that team from 72 that was 69-13, won 33 straight and won the NBA title. Jim McMillan was a key player, a key starter on that team. And sadly, he passed away at age 68, but just wanted to take a moment to remember him as well.
Tim, can't thank you enough for your time, man. Really appreciate it. And enjoy the games, and look forward to having you on again soon, brother.
All right, Fred. Thanks. Enjoy the finals.